Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know, I love talking to authors because they have the courage to take their thoughts, their stories, their lessons, put it down on a piece of paper and share it with the many, ultimately changing their legacy, destiny, and the world around them. And if you're looking to write a book out there, check out Dream Starters Publishing. We can help you out with wherever you're at in the process. And if you have a book, you want to put it on autopilot to generate leads for your business, check out bookmarketingcrm.com. The book we're talking about today is all about financial independence. And most people who listen to this podcast are looking for ways to maybe take control of their life. And in order to do that, I believe you need to have your finances in the right place and with the right mindset so you can capitalize on the chaos that's all around us. And the book that we are referencing today is called Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. It has 834 reviews on Amazon. So I'm going to look this up and read it myself. And the author is with us, Chris Mamula. Thanks so much for being here, man.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. What made you want to write it? And if you can give us a quick little background on where you come from and how you got to where you're at now.
Yeah. So I come from a small town in Western Pennsylvania, and I currently am, I don't know what exactly you call me. I guess I'm semi-retired. I retired as a physical therapist when I was 41. We moved our family. We now live in the mountains of Utah, where I kind of, I guess I'm first and foremost a stay-at-home dad and a ski bum. I do some part-time work. I still write a blog, still kind of promoting the book whenever I have the opportunities. And I do some part-time financial planning work just recently within the past year.
Well, you said Western Pennsylvania. I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Where were you born?
Johnstown. I went to Pitt.
Nice. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize that's where you're from.
Yeah. When did you leave there?
2019, summer of 2019.
And so how old are you?
I am 47.
47. Do you know the Oldhams?
No.
Okay. Do you know Alyssa Oldham? You don't remember that girl at all? No?
No. Nah.
She was right around, I mean, I'm 39 years old, so I only know because, and she was a few years behind me in school, but Johnstown is all she talked about, right? And she's like, I can't wait to leave Johnstown. So I didn't know if you're, And by the way, Johnstown, I'm very familiar because I'm a history buff, the Johnstown flood. I've always wanted to go there and, you know, big ghost type of guy. So it seems like you wanted to get the heck out of there and I guess travel west then, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's where both my wife and my family is both from. And so we go back there a lot for that reason to visit family. But otherwise, yeah, we're kind of fell in love somehow with being from there, like being mountain people. So we're skiers, rock climbers, mountaineers. And so that's what we would kind of always were looking to escape and get out and do things. And we kind of tried to design our life around that. And we were able to do that. So yeah, we live in mountains of Utah. I actually skied this morning and it's a pretty nice lifestyle. I think it was my 55th day on the mountain, not including backcountry and other resorts and stuff. So yeah.
I'm with you, man. I'm a Pennsylvania guy through and through, Pittsburgh guy. And so I love being in the woods. And when I travel to like Florida and certain areas in Texas, I'm like, where are the mountains? Where are the woods? I could never be here. I need this outdoorsy stuff. Maybe I get it because we're just from, you know, from Pennsylvania. So yeah. I'm with you on that. Financial independence, though, has it always been in your blood to just be financially free, to have the freedom to go wherever, whenever, with whomever?
So in my book, the principles, a lot of the principles I wrote about were kind of instilled in me by my parents. I grew up in a family that didn't have a whole lot of money, but we were very kind of anti-debt, very much live within your means. So I had that kind of built in, but I would say like anything as far as any technical, like investing, tax planning, retirement planning, anything like that, I was completely financially illiterate on all that stuff. Kind of the way I like to explain it is I went, again, being from Pittsburgh, I went to the University of Pittsburgh. I was in school for 7 years learning how to make money, and I never learned one thing from grade school through college that really stuck with me about how to do anything with your money to, you know, invest it, grow it, protect it. What I did is I went to my parents again. I thought they were pretty good with their money. So I asked them what they were doing, if they were using a financial advisor. They were. And so that was the extent of my due diligence. I went with their guy. I never asked him a question. I did everything he said for like 10 years. My wife and I being first generation college grads within our family, we made decent salaries and we kind of just never inflated our lifestyle too much. We lived kind of, again, like the kind of the term in the climbing community is like being a dirtbag or a ski bum. So we kind of like that was what we wanted to do. That's where we spent our money. And I thought we lived pretty well. Like we traveled all over and we were doing the things we like to do. but we just lived off one salary and banked the other. So we saved a ton of money, but we, I thought initially got ripped off by our financial advisor. What I later found out was we got very standard financial advice, and that's what took me down the path of writing about personal finances, kind of become a consumer advocate, and really kind of just to give me a positive outlet to deal with my anger and frustration with all the mistakes we made and kind of, again, feeling ripped off. So, yeah.
Wow. What you're talking about, it kind of resonates with me whenever I realized everything I was taught in school was the wrong way to look at money. Rich Dad, Poor Dad sits behind me because it opened my eyes to how the wealthy think. And is that basically what happened to you, where you realized that all the advice, all the lessons was actually poor financial literacy? And therefore, you were not free. You were not happy, right? You were able to now take all of these bad advice you learned, realize that there is a better way, and then you became sort of the mentor to others, right? That you completed the hero's journey. You found something out that most people want to find, and therefore now it's up to you to provide those solutions to others. Is that right?
Partially, yeah. So, I mean, I think like a lot of the habits that it's called the FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early, this community. And I found these FIRE bloggers, a lot of them were blogging anonymously with these kind of odd names like Mr. Money Mustache and the Mad Scientist were some of the big ones like at the time when I found them. And these people were writing these things that, you know, like a lot of the foundational things, saving a lot of your money, living below your means is what my wife and I were doing, which felt kind of weird because most people, you know, like you make more money, you buy a bigger house, you buy a fancier car, and you live up to your standards. Again, we were kind of rooted in this dirtbag kind of ski bum community. So we just kind of did the things we wanted, but we didn't feel the need to spend every last dollar to, you know, show off our wealth or anything. So we were just saving aggressively. So we had that part right. But some of the investing and tax planning things, these bloggers, I mean, they made it sound so simple. And I was like, it can't be that easy. That can't be right. And so we started talking to like an accountant friend we had. And when she first looked at us and she said, like, where are you getting this stuff? And I was like, is this illegal? Are we going to do like, are we doing something crazy? She said, no, it's really smart. It's just nobody thinks that way. And even like as an accountant, people went to her and just said, fill out our tax returns, but they didn't do a lot of planning. And so like this community really helped me. And that's kind of, again, another thing that kind of spurred me on to start writing is to kind of just pay that forward and help other people.
I love the quote that you started off the intro with, and it's the story you tell yourself becomes your reality. God, I mean, I think that's from one of the, you say Kellogg, I forget the name, but it's a Kellogg. And he's
I actually, as I was writing the book, I was listening to this podcast, and it was a mountaineer that actually was killed in the mountains. But yeah, it was this quote that it just kind of resonated with me. And I love that quote.
It's true. So no matter what, you're telling yourself a story that becomes your reality. So if you look at money a certain way, or if you look at debt a certain way, it becomes your reality. And so you have to reframe that if you want to become financially independent, in my opinion. You have a couple stages here. The first one is getting to zero. I like this. It sounds very much like a Dave Ramsey approach, right? Getting to zero. So tell me what getting to zero means.
Yeah. So, I mean, it can kind of mean different things to different people. But like when your net worth is zero, so like literally you're worthless as far as like from a financial standpoint, but it's totally not a worthless goal because most people, you know, their paycheck comes in and they already have a car payment and it's going out. They have a rent or a mortgage payment. So that's going out. They have other debt, you know, student loans, maybe consumer debt. And so a lot of their paycheck is spent for them. So if you can get to zero, whether that means debt-free, except for a mortgage, maybe for a lot of people is a realistic goal, or, you know, no consumer debt, at least no, you know, any, whether it means like your assets are equal to your liabilities where you're at zero at least, but you're starting to get to that point where you can start to envision the life that you want to live going forward versus paying for past decisions. So yeah, I think that's a huge first step. And I think a lot of people, it kind of feels hopeless because you're a lot of people are starting in debt and they're so far in the hole. But yeah, if you could at least just get to zero, that's a big first step and it starts to give you power moving forward.
It sounds like you never really hit this point, but I was $300,000 in personal debt, okay? Not business debt, $300,000 personal. And I was basically no job, trying to start a business. And it was scary as hell, but it fueled me to really take some big shots, right? Make some big moves. And I was able to pay off my debt. But getting back to zero, it felt so good. I felt like a free man. And so I'm liking this lesson. And once you fix yourself, whether it's your mindset or your financial situation, I don't know, you make better decisions long-term. I think when people are behind the eight ball or maybe in debt, they're looking at short-term moves. But once you're free, you make bigger long-term moves, which whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, and therefore you can actually build wealth. So is that why you say get back to zero so you can actually see a longer vision, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm gonna kind of hold this up, and I know people probably can't see this, but when you were doing your little intro, if you could see the word that I wrote there, but you said mindset, and I wrote that down because I love that in your intro. And like, so in the book, we broke it down into spend less, earn more, invest better. Like that's really the only three levers you can pull. You spend less and you earn more to increase your savings. And then once you have savings, then you can start thinking about investing. But the whole first section of the book that we added before that is mindset, because all this is really a mind game. Like if you view saving as sacrifice, you're just not going to do it. But if you view saving as, you know, you're going to free up this mental space where now you can maybe take more risks, or now you can actually live the life you want versus, you know, your paycheck is spent paying off the biggest house and the fanciest car because that's what everybody else does. It's all about mindset. Because if you don't believe that there's something better out there, why would you do something different than what everybody else is doing? So yeah, it's all about mindset.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah, you have to fix your mind. And I think that has to be the first step, right? You fix your mind, then you start to see, you know, what you did in the past that was wrong. And then, oh, I looked at it this way and okay, and I need to fix myself. It's like this new rebirth, very much like Carl Jung says, these ground zero moments are possibly the greatest thing ever because you start to know who you really are in your darkest days. And that's when you can rebuild yourself the right way. So fix your mindset. But in one of your other milestones or stages, however you look at it, hitting six figures. Now, when I broke six figures, I think it was 2019, somewhere in there. I felt successful. I felt confident that I'm doing something the right way. And therefore, I was given some type of, I guess you could say, incentive to keep going, but also to trust my gut instincts that were serving me well. So tell me about milestone number three here, man.
Yeah, so the reason I think that one is a big deal in my mind is, I mean, so much of personal finance, especially if you're talking about like seeing a financial advisor, everything is about like managing investments and investment. And investing is absolutely important. I'm not downplaying it, but you have to have money to invest first. So it's about having the mindset to have money to invest. So you have to have savings. And for compounding to start work, and again, compounding is a magical thing because your money is now working for you. But to get to that first six figures, I mean, it's a slog. It takes a long time and it's just building and building and building. Because let's say you have $10,000 and you can make a 50% return, which is unheard of, you know, without taking an incredible amount of risk. Yep. Okay. So you're going to now have, you made $5,000 for the year. I can go work a month doing a not super high paying job and make $5,000, right? So it takes an incredible amount of risk to make $5,000 off of 10,000, you know, but if you have $100,000, it's not very hard. Like you can put your money in a money market today and make 5%, and that's $5,000 of free money. So now you start to really see your money working. You start to see that snowball rolling in your favor when you have that six figures. It's not that it's not working when you have, you know, $100, but it's just so small and so minuscule that it's not going to really move the needle. And so as you start to get bigger and bigger balances, that compounding and that interest and that investment returns really starts to make a difference. And your money's working for you, which starts to shift that mindset from what most people do, with which you always are working for money.
Now, is your philosophy to become an entrepreneur? It sounds like this is a book that's for anybody, whether you're an employee or just, you know, maybe thinking about starting a business, but really just financial independence has nothing to do with starting a business. So is that your belief that you technically can become wealthy and free with any situation? My philosophy is whether you are an employee or not, think like an entrepreneur. Therefore, you have multiple revenue streams and maybe you have equity in X amount of places, but start to really capitalize on all the opportunities we've been given, all with the resources and tools. And maybe you still stay with that job, even though I would say quit. But I would still say, hey, you know, if you have a job and whether you're happy or not with it, start to maybe get multiple streams of income. Therefore, you're not tied to this one. And as time goes on, time becomes an asset because as you go through this life and you invest in other places, you have more revenue streams, but maybe more net worth, and therefore you have more financial freedom. So, what's your belief on that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times entrepreneurship can be overly glamorized, and I don't think everybody is built to be an entrepreneur, and you certainly don't need to be an entrepreneur. So what we're basically, I think the message is, again, there's this community. It was originally really known as the FIRE community, financial independence, retire early. So it was basically just save and invest very aggressively so you don't have to do anything. And I think most people aren't, especially people that are ambitious enough to save enough to retire in their 30s or 40s or even 50s. They're not really wired to do nothing. So kind of the way I look at it is to save enough again, and that comes back to those stages of financial independence, which is where I love where you kicked off the interview and where we kicked off the book, where you can start to have freedom to do whatever you want. So for some people, that does mean starting a business, and it's a lot less risky when, you know, you have a couple of, at least a couple of months. And then if you have a couple of years, and if you have a couple of decades, you can really, it could be a service oriented business where you don't even need to make money. It cannot be for profit. It could be whatever you want it to be. So that's kind of more where we lie, is have your personal finances in order to support you to be able to do whatever you want without as much risk. And if that is starting a business, great. If that means stepping down, again, I do financial planning on a part-time basis because it's kind of a passion project, because I mentioned like what got me into this. I write as a way to kind of give back. But I also, again, I'm kind of a ski bum and I'm a stay-at-home dad. And those are really the, if you ask me like what my title is, my job title, those are the things I like to talk about first, because that's the stuff I really love to do. And I build my life around that, and I build some work in because it's rewarding. And it is also, it's nice to have some income coming in. Yeah, that's kind of where I land on that.
And so to not get into serious debt, sounds like you're pretty smart from the get-go, but you know, just being aware of, you know, living below your means is crucial. And especially as an entrepreneur, you don't need the nicest stuff. And I mean, you don't need a big house. I had a house that was, you know, 3,500 square feet. It was an older house. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm only in two rooms. Like, living below my means and being really smart with my money allows me to sleep good at night and be free. So like, when you talk to people, is that the hardest part, is kind of breaking away from this keeping up to the Joneses mindset? And financial independence is really based off of where you see yourself 5 years from now, and doing these small incremental bite-sized chunk steps that will help you obtain that. And so you knew what you wanted. You wanted to be a ski guy, right? You wanted to be a dad, knowing what you want and not trying to impress anybody else to get there. That's really one of the hardest things to break in this social media friendly world, right?
I agree. And I think I was kind of lucky and growing up in a time when there was no social media. Excuse me. So I think I was kind of lucky.
Yeah. Take a drink, man. No worries.
Yeah. Sorry, I got choked there. I think I was kind of lucky. And why I kind of, and my wife kind of fell into that, I honestly don't know. I think, again, I came from a family where we didn't have a lot of money, but just kind of having that security and that confidence. And that was, I think, ingrained in me by my family to not follow kind of what the crowd does. And for whatever reason, we just kind of chose to go down that path. But it all comes down to mindset. And again, like, I don't certainly judge people. Like, I have very good friends who have a very nice house. And they love to entertain. They have people at their house all the time. To me, like, that would be so stressful. I hate having people. Like, I hate cleaning. I hate maintaining a property. So we have a very small, simple house because that fits us. But I think, like, for them, a big house fits them, and it's very intentional, and more power to them. The problem is most people, they just buy the biggest house because they go to a realtor, they get pre-approved for a mortgage, whatever that pre-approval is, they are taken to see houses that, you know, are at the top of that range. And that's what most people do. And the same with a car, they walk into a dealership, they are pre-approved for a loan, and then magically they get into a car that's at the top level of what that is. Like, we just always, like, said, what do kind of house do we want to live in? What kind of car do we want to drive? What do we want to do? And we certainly are not ultra frugal. Like, I've been to the Super Bowl a couple times, again, being from Pittsburgh. We went to Detroit and Tampa. We saw the Steelers in the Super Bowl twice. I've climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and I've been on African safari. Like, we've done high altitude mountaineering in South America. That's what the stuff was important to us, was experiences and travel and family. And we just built our life around that. But that meant simple houses, simple cars, because again, it's just very intentional.
Beautiful. So here's my outline, and I would love to hear what your outline is for somebody out there listening right now, maybe who they have debt and they're trying to fix themselves and maybe to create that financial freedom. In my opinion, and this may be wrong, but this is how I handled it. I looked at my, 10 credit cards at the time. And I said, what has the lowest balance? Forget about interest rates. I know this is probably the wrong way when it comes to Susie Orman and Dave Ramsey, but I look at this as a street fight, and it's 10 against one. What balance that I can clear off in the next week or next month? So therefore it's 9-1, and then the 8-1, and then the 7-1. So it becomes manageable in my mind that, all right, the fight's getting more even. And so I did that slowly but surely, whether it was school loans or whether it was the house or the car or the credit cards, clear them off. That's the way I do it. But then when I'm back to zero, like you said, I love that. then I start to take my extra money and I apply the 80-20 rule. 80% goes back into my business. 20% goes into alternative investments that produce cash flow or some type of equity that I know is going to grow in the future. Therefore, I have my money working for me. But I believe I have more control as an entrepreneur with my money to grow it with multiple revenue streams within my team. That's my philosophy. So if you can kind of give the game plan that what you would recommend for anybody out there listening, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I can just kind of reflect back something that you said, but you have to find what works for you.
Yes.
So I think that's the key. Like what works for you and what works for me may not work for that third person. So each person has to figure that out for themselves. But I think what most people do is they don't really know where their money's going. Most people don't budget. And most people don't track their spending. So the first thing I advise everybody to do, no matter where you're at in the game, is sit down and just kind of track your spending for, I mean, the minimum would be a month, but really like 3 to 6 months. So you're starting to see patterns and where money's going. And then you'll start to see things that come in, like maybe car insurance that only gets paid twice a year, or the vacations and things like that that don't happen all the time. But just really understand where your money's going without judgment, without like, you know, beating yourself up if you're seeing a lot of money's going to things that don't align with your values. But like, where is your money going? And then like, are the things that you say important? Is that where your money is going or not? I mean, for almost everybody, the three biggest expenses are housing, cars, and food. If you don't say like your house is a big priority for you and that's your number one area of spending, what are we going to do about that? Are you willing to move? Are you willing to change that big thing? And then like, what other things are you spending on? Do you have 7 different cable subscriptions or streaming services or whatever? Like, is that that's not what you say is important, but that's where, you know, you have several hundred dollars a month. Like, which things can we start paring down? And then what things are you saying are important? You say your kids are important. You say travel is important. Well, how much are you spending on those things? And you know, how can we redirect money that's going to things that you know, that aren't important, but are getting your money to things that you say that are important, that's going to actually add value to your life. And I think that's where most people should start.
And the best way to do that, and the way I look at it now, is I have everything connected to QuickBooks. I think that was the easiest way for me to do it, but also set up, and this is going to get into the weeds, but triggers to go into an Excel sheet. And therefore I can just look at an Excel sheet. But doing this, once again, very painful in the beginning, because you're like, wow, I can't believe I'm spending this much on food. And it is shocking. It's scary. And I guarantee some of the people you work with, the first set or 2 months you do this with them might be extremely painful, but my God, the clarity. And once you have clarity, you have an advantage from the next week or next month. And therefore you can start to get a control over this situation. So any other like solutions on, is it just an Excel sheet? Is it a notepad? Is it a Word document? What's the easiest way?
Again, in my household, like my wife is an Excel nut, so she's great with building spreadsheets. So that's how we do it personally. Like Mint was this very popular program for a while. They just actually folded. There's like a program called Monarch Money. There's You Need a Budget. There's all kinds of different programs you can explore and find one that fits you. But again, there is no one. If there was one answer, if this was easy, everybody would be doing it. You kind of have to experiment till you find that thing that works for you. But there's nothing wrong with sitting down with a pen and a paper. And I think most people use a credit card. If that's where your money goes, that makes it very easy to kind of just, you have a list of your transactions in front of you. You know what your rent or mortgage, if you have that, which most people do, car payments, put them down, just get a pen and a paper and just start writing, or use a spreadsheet, or again, whatever works for you. But the key is, don't run from it. Just be honest with yourself. Don't judge past decisions, but just kind of look and say, what can we change to start moving forward tomorrow?
When you meet with people and you ask them, hey, why do you want this financial independence? What do you see yourself doing? I mean, I think in chapter 2 of your book, you talk about starting with why. I realized that there's so many people out there who actually don't know what they want. So is there any steps, tips, or ideas on how to maybe get people to start thinking about this? Because once again, you really want to build the dream life, right? And if people are out there listening to this podcast, most likely you're an entrepreneur. A lot of people start the business and then they build their dream life around their business. Well, it took me a little bit of time to realize, heck, why don't I build a schedule that I want? And then the business kind of fits around that. All right. So it's almost like the reverse engineering it. And I would assume that maybe this is something you do. It might not have anything to do with their finances at first, but my God, where you put your energy is where you get your results. And really, money is a symbol of what's important to you, like you said. So do you help people do this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really think it's just a lot of this is just, you know, what makes you happy. Like, you know what those things are that you want to do more of. And then so just say, like, why am I not doing it? Is it because of money? Is it because I, you know, have to work so much? Is it because I have to live in a location because of my work? And then how do you start, you know, just again, reverse engineering. I love that term. And that idea of just, you know, how do you get more of the things that you want and that are going to make you happy? And then also, again, if there's one criticism I have, again, we were very intentional with not using that FIRE acronym. And because I think a lot of people like think you have to wait till you have this number, till you have complete financial independence, till right. you can retire. And how can you start building that life like tomorrow? Like, how can you make your life 1% better? And then if you can do that 1% every week or every month, you know, and just like investments compound and every like those little changes compound. So yeah, absolutely.
Your book is broken up into basically four sections: getting started, spending less, earning more. Yeah. Spending less. Once you, I think people automatically spend less once they have an idea of where it's going. So I think that's a huge tip, guys. If you're out there struggling, get an understanding of where your money's going. Earning more, whether it's a job or whether it's some type of business, obviously huge point there. We could talk for hours about that, but the one I really want to focus on is investing better. So what's your tips for that? What do you invest in? Obviously this is not financial advice via podcast, but what do you recommend or what are you doing specifically when it comes to the investment and what's your strategy look like?
Yeah. So in the book, we broke it down into what we call the simple path, the active path, and then the hybrid path. So the simple path is just using what most people think of as investments, stocks, bonds, but basically making it really simple, focusing on the things that you can control. So really low cost, really highly diversified, really tax efficient. So passive index funds and ETFs, and making it as simple as possible. And then just having really realistic expectations, knowing that, you know, your returns are really out of your control. You're reliant on the market. And over time, you should probably expect to get about 8 to 10% a year. And so the key is you have to have a high savings rate if you want to achieve financial independence quickly doing that. But it's very reliable and it's very passive on the investment part. But you do have to have a reasonably high savings rate if you want to achieve financial independence quickly with that. The other two paths, the hybrid path and the active path, means putting a lot more of your personal effort into it. So the active path is kind of what you talked about, starting your own small business. When you're investing in one business versus investing in thousands of businesses in a mutual fund, an index fund, you obviously have a lot more potential to explode and have much higher returns than 10%. You're not limited to that cap of, you know, what the market's going to give you, but there's also the risk that you're going to go to zero. So, you know, like it's a totally different skill set. It's a totally different way of looking at risk. It's a totally different way of approaching life. And none of these are mutually exclusive. You can certainly invest in your business and then, you know, put money in real estate or in passive investments on the side. And I just kind of gave away the hybrid path, but real estate is that third path where it's kind of a hybrid where real estate, just very much like stocks and bonds, is going to have regular income in the form of rents. It's also going to tend to appreciate over time, like stocks and bonds, like a portfolio would. It'll go up in value passively. Some of that's just through inflation, and real estate just tends to go up over time. And so it's kind of a mix of that passive approach where you kind of have more predictable and more set results, but you also do, it is also a business. So the more you want to put into it, if you're somebody that's handy and can fix things up and use sweat equity, or if you're somebody that's out there willing to hustle and find good deals, or if you're somebody that can finance things on your own and save on financing, there's different things you can do to lever up your return. So it's kind of a hybrid between the two. So those are the three approaches that we write about in the book. And my own personal approach was always index funds. And now I kind of have a little lifestyle business in retirement with my blog and the book. I'm really became financially independent by passive investments and a high savings rate.
Nice. And it looks like, I'm just reading some of your reviews and testimonials, by the way, incredible amount of reviews. And some of these great little takeaways that people are listening is that, you know, there are certain things that you can do to save money. And there are many gym buddies that I know and people who own gyms, they were not going to like this, but certain things that you can do that you don't even think about that can start to help you save money, like quitting the gym, it sounds like. And so do you have any other tips that you could provide that, maybe you're not recommending, you know, stop taking care of your health, but like certain things, maybe you could start working out at home if you need to save that extra $30, $40 a month, or the traveling, the gas back and forth, whatever it is, that you maybe start to get a little bit of a control over their finances. So any tips that you recommend in the book that are easy to share?
I mean, I'll just kind of give you some personal things. Like, I think you can make basically any hobby as expensive or as cheap as you want it to be. So like, I know a lot of people like golf and consider that an expensive hobby. And like, you can certainly like go to a different course every week and go to higher end courses and buy new clubs every year because you have to have the new driver or whatever. And the same thing could be said for skiing, like where you have to have the newest gear. Like, that's kind of my thing. And I love skiing, but like, I have the same pair of skis for several years. And I tend to buy them at the end of the year on clearance. And I tend to buy a season pass at one resort versus spending. I spend probably $800 for my season pass. And I mentioned before, I don't know if it was before we started recording, but I skied this morning and I think I have 53 days on for $800. Or you can go to the resort where I go and it's $160 per day if you buy a 1 day pass. So like season passes or, you know, like using your gear for a couple of years, stuff like that. So you can make things as expensive or as affordable as you want. So do you want to focus on having like, you know, the newest, fanciest gear and like going to the fanciest places? Or do you want to be out doing the thing you love all the time and, you know, not relying on doing this one big trip a year? And if you have terrible weather or no snow when you get there, you're skiing in crud anyway. Or do you want to build your life around it? And you can do it a ton and you can do it for much cheaper. And it's kind of like just with anything, whatever your personal passion is, kind of figuring out how you can do it for less and do it more enjoyably too.
Man, it sounds like you really figured out your what really sets your soul on fire, and you just, you know, submerged your life in that, and nothing's going to just pull you away from it. You know yourself, and whether it's the big house, the fancy cars, you know, the luxurious trips, none of that really interests you as much as being able to do what you want when you want, such as ski and be with your family. So, man, there's so much power in that. And then you talk about with your, and this is a note from one of your readers, but how important it is to get your spouse on board. I don't know if that's referenced in your book, but you know, it sounds like you and your wife are on the same page when it comes to financial independence, both of you being very clear that you're going in the same direction, doing the same thing. So is that talked about in your book, and anything you can recommend on that?
I mean, I really think it's just, I think a lot of times people talk about like money is the biggest stressor and it's the biggest cause of divorce. And I think really it's not necessarily money, but it's just values. If you have the same values, and then your money is just a reflection of your values. So I think you have to have good communication, and you have to share values, and you have to be able to talk and get on the same page with things. And then if you line your money up with your values, and that'll just follow along. But I think when two people have two very different value sets, then money is going to be a stress, but a lot of things are going to be a stress. So I think it's more of a value issue there, and just lining that up with your spending.
So how many kids do you have?
One
kid. So are you doing anything pretty cool or specific? Are you homeschooling them? Are you doing anything that's teaching them the importance of money and having money be, you know, maybe at the forefront of, you know, the education system and understanding that you can actually do a lot of good with it? You can create the life of your dreams, or you can create a nightmare every day with this. So like, is there anything you're doing that you could share with our audience?
Yeah. So I love to talk about money and finances because I've done a lot of research. Like, as far as parenting, I have one child, so this is an N of one. So I'll tell you my approach, but how reliable and repeatable it is, I don't know. But I will tell you my own personal philosophy is, like, I look back again when we talked about my background and like the things that I saw my parents do every day, living within their means, being very anti-debt, being just hardworking and reputable and generous with their money. Those things all passed on to me. But then the negative things, like not ever learning about investing and just trusting an advisor and, you know, not ever learning how income tax system works. Like, when I wrote my book, my dad was actually my first reader, and he would read each chapter like as I was writing them. And when I got my tax chapter, I rewrote it 5 different times because he would say, I don't understand this. And finally, after it just clicked for him, he said, you know, I paid taxes my whole life. At this time, he was just retiring at a traditional age. And he said, I never understood that. And so I believe that. Like, I believe that, you know, you can talk to your kid 50 times and tell them something and they're not going to listen to you. But when they see you doing something, I think that sticks. So like, we do talk to her, like we ski every Friday afternoon. They have a half day. And she knows, like, the other days of the week, we're dropping her at school and going skiing. And we talk about like why we can do that. And most of her friends' parents can't. We just talk about like why we can, travel and do the things that we do. And you know, she has all these hobbies and we're not shy about spending money for her to be able to do them. But we do talk about like why we can do that. And I think she picks up on that. But as far as like overtly teaching her things, not very much. I would say if I'm doing one thing, to try to teach her probability, I'm trying to teach her like blackjack and poker right now because she's very into like in math, like they're learning probability. I was like, well, how can we make this fun? So I'm teaching her like some games like that where it's part chance and part statistics and kind of, because I think that's a big part of it being a good investor is understanding that some stuff you control and some stuff you don't.
And it's great that you say that. And I don't have any kids, but from what I've heard, they don't do what you say. They do what you do, right? They're paying attention and therefore lessons are caught, not taught. And it seems like they're watching you. And so make sure to show them, hey, you really can build a life if, as long as you do X, Y, and Z, but you're doing it through example rather than just by telling. So that's awesome, man. But you're a Pittsburgh guy and you said you were all around Pittsburgh. Obviously, are you still a major Penguins guy? You have to be a Penguins fan still, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Pittsburgh sports teams are in a bear market if we want to like use like,
you ain't kidding. Oh my, and it doesn't look good for another couple of years still.
No, like I across the board, like the only thing that had me a little bit excited this year was Pitt basketball, and then they didn't even get into the tournament. So like if that's the most excited you can get, it's to be like the 69th
best team
or whatever.
Actually, the Buccos. I mean, it's still early, but I'm not a Pirates fan. I actually laugh at anybody who still is a Pirates fan, but my God, they're actually playing pretty well this year, right now, huh?
We'll see how that lasts.
It gets to about game 30, game 40, and then shit hits the fan, right?
Yes.
Well, is there a website or any type of way to get in touch with you? It sounds like you do a lot of this work, maybe even part-time. Maybe it's not your full thing. So is there any way that they can get in contact with you outside of like maybe even your Facebook group? It seems like that's pretty big, so...
So my personal home on the internet is called Can I Retire Yet? That's my personal blog. So you can find pretty much anything there that I do kind of linked out. The book is called Choose FI, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. That's, you know, available for sale anywhere where books are sold. And then my new project, the thing that I'm really excited about right now, I do part-time work just 10 hours a week for a company called Abundo Wealth. And it's a financial planning practice that just does, it's called advice only. So we try to be very low cost, try to eliminate a lot of the conflicts that kind of I had when I was working with an advisor. And then again, this is kind of my project, kind of throwing my weight behind this startup that I really believe in what they're doing. And it's really fun and exciting for me to do. And again, so I only do it 10 hours a week, but I also kind of help promote them when I'm out promoting other stuff and I can help get the word out with stuff like this. So I'm very excited about that right now.
Nice. And so do you have a podcast? I'm just reading through some of your reviews and it seems like there's a podcast associated with the book. Is that right?
Yeah. So Choose FI is a podcast where they, when they started, they were interviewing just people, kind of the early people in the FIRE movement, the people that I was reading. And so as I was getting ready to leave my career, I was a physical therapist when I was back in Pennsylvania and I was getting ready to leave my career. And I found like, again, all these bloggers really helped me. And at the same time, I was kind of finding podcasts and I got into Tim Ferriss at the time.
Of course.
And he would interview people from like all walks of life who were really successful. And I was like, huh, that would be cool if I just talked to all these people from the FIRE community. And he had a book called Tools of Titans, which kind of then took all his interviews and put them into a book format. And so that was going to be my retirement project. And then two guys started Choose FI, this podcast. And it was just starting and just starting to take off. And I was like, man, that's exactly what I wanted to do. And they're kind of doing it now. And so I don't really need to reinvent the wheel. So I reached out to them and I said, hey, what do you think about turning this into a book? And they said, you know, your timing is amazing because they were just starting to take off and they were thinking like they're getting all these stories in random order and they needed something more linear. So we teamed up on the thing. So it's their podcast. And then that was the basis of the book. A lot of the stories in the book I took and then distilled them down into principles that anybody could apply through. But I think people relate to stories, so they had some great stories. So it was a nice partnership in that way.
Man, I've been doing this a long time. I just love when I read bios on Amazon that have personality. And guys, just listen to this. In addition to writing, he now focuses on being a dedicated husband, stay-at-home dad, and dirtbag/ski bum, right? I mean, I've heard that phrase a few times, but reading it in your bio, that's hilarious, man. Just so you know, keep that personality out there. Your personality creates your personal reality, and you find people who share that. And that's a Dr. Joe Dispenza quote, but you find people who, you know, can see through and say, like, oh, that's a real person. That's awesome. So, guys, check out his book. It is all about financial independence. Choose FI, your blueprint to financial independence. And yeah, Pennsylvania guy, you got to support those Pittsburghers or even Johnstowners, and you obviously keeping the family as your first and foremost most important thing in your life. Obviously, skiing, being a dirtbag skier, secondary for sure. So that's great, man. Anything else? Any social media wise? Are you out there? Is there anything that people can find you on? Get in touch with you.
No, I really try to stay off social media as much as I can. I think the best place to connect with me is, again, through my personal blog, caniretireyet.com, or at Abundo Wealth is where I'm. That's the two places it's easiest to find me.
Good stuff, guys. All right. So look up Chris Mamula. Thanks so much for being here, man. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. And that was pretty cool finding out you're a Pittsburgh guy. So that was fun.
Yeah, I don't talk to too many. I got to say, that's awesome. So remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.